Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for. Don't tell that story yet, Liz.
Okay.
Not yet, Libby.
Okay.
Not yet. Okay. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. We are thrilled because it's Monday and we're in air conditioning.
Yes.
And we're with you,
important.
And it's very nice. Good morning. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get started on what's happening in the world. We have quite a group assembled here. Libby Post is with us. She is a political consultant. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mike Spain is with us. Mike, good morning. He is the associate editor of the Times Union and with us this morning, and we're thrilled.
Thank you.
Thank you
Glad
very
to be
much.
Here.
And David Soares is the Albany County District Attorney. Thank you very much for being here.
First time I've ever heard the words thrilled and Monday together.
Good point there.
Well, I will tell you, Sunday night I realized Libby wrote me a little note about 9:15 and she said, have you
Where are the articles?
Have you sent the stories sure. yet? And I said, no, because I don't have a panel yet. And then you two helped me. Greatly. So I thank you very much for your quick turnaround and being here this morning.
It was the air conditioning. That
it
got
was.
It.
Yes, it'll be cool.
Yeah,
well, I promise you it'll be cool.
We walked in and Dave Gastina had a sweatshirt on. So you know, and well, so does Mr. Allen over there.
No, I had to.
I have to.
You're so delicate.
Anyway, good morning, and it's so nice to have you with us, Alan. I didn't say good morning. Hello.
Well, good morning. We went to the 90th anniversary of the Berkshire Theater Group, Berkshire Theater
the big
Festival
gala.
Yesterday. It was unbelievably well done. Kate McGuire, who we all love, was a terrific spokesperson about how all of that came about. And people really, really were very happy. It was joyous, but it was hot.
Yeah, it's hot.
It was warm.
Was it outside or inside?
What'd you say?
Was it out in a tent or?
Oh, no, a huge tent
yeah.
at the BTF itself, not at the Colonial, which they also run
right.
as part of their thing. It was really very well done.
Wonderful. That is good. And just a quick Berkshire note that we will be broadcasting live from Tanglewood on Friday. It's the kickoff to the Tanglewood Boston Symphony Orchestra season, and we will be broadcasting live on Friday morning at Tanglewood. So keep that in mind as well. So let us go to what is happening in the world. And so I'll begin actually with a story that I didn't send along last night because we didn't really know yet. But,
oh, surprise.
Michael Cohen has said that we can read into, I guess, we can read into his comments. There's been some question for a while or been some talk for a while that he is ready to assist in the prosecution, and the comment that he made is that his loyalty goes to family. The president's longtime personal attorney also refused to follow Trump's lead to cast the FBI in a negative light over raids on his home, hotel room, and his office. I believe the direct quote, and hopefully I can bring this up, is that he is putting his loyalty to his family and his country first. My wife, my daughter, and my son have my first loyalty and always will. What does that say? Of course, you will remember this is the same man that said he would take a bullet for President Trump.
So why don't we go to David Soares, who involves himself in the plea bargaining process all the time, and maybe he can give us some insight into this.
Well, I can tell you that for Mr. Cohen, it's the first intelligent thing that I've heard him speak and say in the last several months. Of course, you know, a few weeks ago, I was listening to the roundtable as well as other media sources. They were questioning, you know, why it is that the prosecutors had yet to speak with Mr. Cohen. And the answer to that was simply because they had not yet finished deconflicting all of the documents that they secured from his office. And once that process was done, you can dive into all of those documents, and you're never going to have a conversation with a target until you're more familiar with all the information than probably he is.
Deconflicting.
That's three of us.
Well, there was the issue of attorney-client privilege.
Right.
with some of the documents that were taken from his law office. And so the court had ordered an impartial party to review all the documents to make sure that there were that what the government was going to have were not privileged information. And so they did that. And so I believe now what you're seeing and what you're hearing coming out of Mr. Cohen is, in fact, a very conciliatory tone, because they're going to be engaging the people very soon in discussing, you know, how his case is going to lay out and what he's willing to do in order to.
But what we don't want to have happen here, at least I don't, is to have him get off on a technicality. So your point is extremely well taken, which is the technicality would be, You rushed him before the proper judicial mandate from the court in terms of the master looking at this stuff happened, and then he gets off. There's something similar, David, that is happening right now in the Calieros trial. I don't know if you've been following this, but
that is fascinating.
Which is, they didn't obey the rules. The prosecution didn't obey the rules. Something about jurisdiction, which I don't understand at all.
It has to do with email and wire transfers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and they didn't prove their case.
Right, and they're supposed to get another chance to do that.
And then they had to rest their case.
Dismiss charges about did not make a decision about the jurisdiction, although she said it. Seemed like, from what she said, she was ready to drop charges against the
judge
upstate developers.
I think you're going to see I think you're going to see a very different, set of organization skills coming from the special prosecutor, because
in the Cohen case,
because every piece of evidence that is reviewed, you're always going to be questioning whether or not it's admissible. You're going to be looking at jurisdictional issues. You're going to be looking at how we lay a proper foundation for these documents. And all of that is sort of built in to the process of the investigation. So by the time you're ready to walk into a grand jury and indict, you don't have these problems.
So do we know what he would be? Stop. We don't know what he'll be charged with yet, correct?
We Cohen. Do not know. No.
Right, Cohen. Right.
Well, we know there's an awful lot of stuff out there that has nothing to do.
I mean,
it
could be the Stormy Daniels payment, it could be some of the past work that he did for the president. And we don't even know if what he's being charged with is directly linked to the president of the United States.
Well, the Washington Post is reporting that there's at least two incidents where they believe Cohen may be related to contacts with the Russians during the campaign, at least two. So that's the direct charge of Mueller and his investigation. So it is pertinent. It isn't like he's just catching him on other things and going after him. It seems like he at least is suspected of being directly involved in the very
issue. And yet, Mike, there are things that are not related to the president that they've got on the guy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the plea bargain will involve some of that. In fact, as I remember it, they handed off to the U.S. attorney some of the stuff rather than pursue it because they didn't think it was directly related to their Russian mandate.
What they'll do is, once they've collected all of the information, they've had an opportunity to thoroughly review it, what they'll find, and this is my guess, is that you have viable federal charges. You'll have other federal charges that would be better prosecuted because of locality, and so they will refer those cases to perhaps the Southern District. But if there are state charges, then you can also look forward to those cases being referred to a state prosecutor for prosecution.
Do we know, as far as what I'm finding interesting in this particular case is given the pattern of whether it be Manafort or Michael, what was the other?
Flynn.
And those indictments where the president then quickly distanced himself. And he hasn't done that with Cohen yet, and hasn't really.
The day is young, Joe.
Well, I know, but I know that.
But I think Joe's point is extremely.
I mean,
well
I just
taken.
Wonder. So it's one of two things, right? It's either that he's not worried about him, or
he is worried about,
or
him.
He is worried about him, and there is some there.
I don't know if I agree with that, because I do recall perhaps about 4 to 5 weeks ago when Rudy Giuliani was just going off and
Rudy
making
Rudy
all of these.
Yeah, where did he go?
Well, you know, they all tend to just disappear.
He did. he was very unkind to Mr. Cohen.
Correct.
And which I thought was very foolish, but I was very predictable when it comes to this
Rudy.
Particular president because
and to Rudy.
You know, instead of doing things that are more public, more overt to demonstrate that you're concerned, perhaps even figuring out a way of paying for some of the litigation expenses, investigation expenses, they didn't do that. And it sent a very clear message to Mr. Cohen that he is on an island by himself.
But if he had something, I mean, if he has something legitimate and he is going to work with prosecutors, wouldn't that be of great concern? Would it not be better to keep them? I'm asking this question of, so is the idea then that the president isn't overly concerned of what will come out of that investigation?
I think the president is concerned. I think he has been concerned. But I believe that this president has made the tactical choice and decision that it is better to discredit him, discredit the investigation, than to address the issues on the merits.
Gotcha.
Right. Wait until, I mean, it's early yet.
Yeah.
That just came out. The tweets haven't started yet. And, you know, he has, I think he is very afraid of what Michael Cohen has to say, and he has left him hanging. He's left him hanging from the day he was arrested, from the day of the raid, other than saying that was a disgusting thing to do. You really haven't heard Trump defending Cohen at all.
And you can't really think for a second that Trump is going to risk a collusion or witness tampering, charge.
Yeah.
By making a mistake here and going to one-on-one with the guy.
Right.
And the one thing that I'll piggyback on what Joe had said earlier, this particular story didn't make the list last night because it's so fresh. I mean, and there's not a lot of coverage on the issue. The telltale sign is going to be how Fox presents the issue today, and they're going to be destroying this guy, and that's going to be an indication of just how concerned the president is about what Mr. Cohen.
But Cohen is also represented Sean Hannity, and there's a connection there that makes this even more awkward. The fact that Trump has yet to tweet about George Stephanopoulos' interview with Cohen that came out today is an indicator that he's nervous.
And he's probably screaming at the top of his lungs and wherever he is.
I want to go back to David and ask this because I think it's a question everybody's probably asking. If Cohen turns and if he cooperates, what kind of a deal could he make? Could he make a deal with all that he's been accused of? And that's a lot. Could he make a deal he never sees a day of jail time?
He could do that, and it depends on the information that he has and the prosecutor because, you know, look, the reality is so many of these cases are very complex cases and they would be difficult to sustain. And even if you found all the evidence in the world, having to put yourself through that investigation, bringing in witnesses, it's costly. It's easier to make a deal with someone who can provide you with information that could lead you to all of the valuable nuggets that you need. And also, you're talking about a person with firsthand account, which is always plays much better in front of a jury than documents or any other piece of evidence.
I mean, you'll remember 12 years ago, or April, I believe it was, where the president said tweeted as all of the Stormy Daniels stuff was going on, that most people will flip if the government lets them out of trouble, even if it means lying or making up stories. Sorry, I don't see Michael doing that. And the response that everybody had was, well, why are you worried about him flipping if you didn't do anything wrong?
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I found when we were having those conversations back 12 years ago in April, we were talking about, well, you know, when they finally indict him, that's when, you know, the pressure will come. And I was saying back then, the pressure is here because you are hiring an entire firm of attorneys to take on the U.S. government. So I can imagine that his legal defense fund must have ended sometime around early June or May. Okay.
$800 an hour billing
hours.
That's,
yes.
Right.
And I think everyone has to learn here. I think for everyone else in the White House or anyone that is within the orbit of this particular president. No one escapes alive. You're right. going mm-hmm. to be ruined. Your life is never going sure. to be the same.
But one thing, Mike, I know, I'm sorry. And that is, the reason I brought up the Calieros case is it shows that the federal prosecutors can really screw up.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, you said, David, they have all their I's dotted and their T's crossed for the what's going on in Washington. But it seems as though what's going on here, these guys are not at the top of their game.
Well, let me also, you know, make the record here that what you're seeing right now is it's not the same group of people that started all of this. And so there's That's been right. a different administration.
Been cleaning out.
And so and a different people looking at the case. So under Preet Bharara, I don't know that you'd have the same case being presented, but you have it, and I'm just speculating here. Yeah. This could be a very different case than what the government had a few months ago.
Mike Spencer.
No, I just had one quick question, David, about the deconflicting aspect of this. Can the federal government take testimony about that might be covered by attorney-client privilege when Cohen was acting as an attorney on behalf of the president?
Government would have to make the case that while Cohen was representing the government, while representing the president, what they were doing was committing a crime. There's no privilege for the commission of a crime. And so the government would have to make a very strong argument in order to overcome that attorney-client privilege.
Interesting.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue. We'll have letters, and we'll talk more about this and other issues. We'll actually get to the docket of stories that we had for today, and we'll talk about that and other stuff. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. This is our weekly reminder. Just keep them short, to the point, and also don't include links. If we're on a topic, stay on topic if you could, and also don't use abbreviations. Proofread your emails before you send them, and one per customer would be awesome. With those rules, we welcome you.
And best not to be abusive.
And be nice. panel@wamc.org.
Be civil.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Libby Post here, Mike Spain, David Soares, and Alan Chartok, who has letters right in front of him and is going to read those to us right now.
Okay. I know we're going to get more, but right now I only have a few.
All right.
And Suzanne says, Cohen and Trump's women problem. Is it possible that there's some connection between Cohen helping Trump pay off women who Trump possibly impregnated, and that this might be one of the reasons why Trump is nearly frantic to get the Supreme Court nomination done? Says Suzanne. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you say yep, but I mean, anybody can make any of these potential things as a possibility.
Well, but the other thing about the Supreme Court stuff is the connection now between Kennedy's son, who was Trump's banker at Deutsche Bank, and the millions of dollars that were laundered, billions of dollars that got laundered through Deutsche Bank. So there's a lot going on.
Of dollars of Trump money.
Yeah, and Russian money and all kinds of money going back and forth.
There are authors out there going, oh, my God, this is real.
Yeah, right. Right. I know it's true because it's like every Tom Clancy novel's now coming to fruition.
Absolutely.
I agree with you, David. There must be a lot of typewriters or whatever they call them now. Clacking away like crazy.
The trouble is that if you have some really great creative, fictional novel, it can't compete with this reality.
Well, that's true. Well, there was that's a true. Thing Nothing on you Facebook can make up is
about Onion going under because they just couldn't keep up with the reality.
The satire? You want satire? Watch 3 o'clock every day for the White House briefing.
Wow. Good point.
Okay, so here comes Jim, who says, Cohen. Trump won't say anything about Cohen. He will make another pardon to send Cohen a message. That's interesting, these pardons that he keeps, making of people.
Deceased boxers, people, whatever.
Yeah, Jim from Glenmont wrote that. Interesting.
The only problem with that analysis, Jim, is that, the financial bankruptcy is going to come before the pardon.
What do you mean, David? I'm sorry.
The bankruptcy of Mr. Cohen and his family, from having to pay a ton of money for representation while this investigation continues.
Okay, so let's just gleefully, at least for me, consider the possibility that he does pardon Cohn now. He goes there. What happens?
What I'm saying, though, is that the pain and suffering that Cohn is experiencing,
he's experiencing now.
What happens? I think.
Will the feckless Republicans in the United States Senate, who are afraid of losing their seats and may well, if they turn on him, will they do the right things a la Nixon back in the day?
No.
No, that's the problem.
They will not.
There's no Howard Baker.
They will not.
Right.
Yeah. The ones you have to keep your eye on, the one I'm always interested in is Lindsey Graham. You know, he can turn on a dime and has been doing so all along.
He even did on Roe. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I have no confidence in that party at all to do the right thing.
Okay, how about Susan Collins?
Oh, my goodness. She's the accordion. Susan, the accordion Collins?
Right.
Does anybody, she says, well, you know, there are enough exit ways for her to get out of this that she's leaving herself.
Oh, absolutely. Susan doesn't blink. I mean, I think during the entire affordable health care protests, I think that frightened her, seeing the number of people in her community that were going to be impacted. I think that frightened her, and so she started saying the right things. But when it actually comes down to actually having to make a tough decision, it's not going to happen for her.
And I don't think it's in her DNA to make those kinds of tough decisions. And she's going to be challenged, and we'll see what happens.
Well, so the comment was is that she would not support a Supreme Court pick that was hostile to abortion rights. That was the statement that she made
yesterday.
Yes, but
she also doesn't think that they're going to be— She talked to the president, and the president said he wasn't going to use that as a litmus test, and she's trusting what he said.
And the president did his usual sneaky thing. He said he's not going to, as you said, Libby, he's not going to ask him the question. Well, they don't have to ask him the question. They vetted these guys. They're 25 people. And he said right from the beginning, none of these people are going to be allow a woman's right to an abortion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Her comment was, a candidate for this important position who would overturn Roe versus Wade would not be acceptable to me because that would indicate an activist agenda that I don't want to see a judge have.
Right. And you've watched the hearings of the candidates or the nominees to be on the Supreme Court and how they definitely handle those by basically talking away until the senator
agenda. I have no agenda.
The senator's minutes are up and then they go on to some friendly questioner.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be appropriate for me to answer that question.
Yeah. Well, you know, and here's the thing. Spain is out of the World Cup, but Spain is in this conversation because he's absolutely right. No one's ever asked direct questions, and if they're asked the direct questions, they're never gonna respond.
So, then there. Do you think there will? Let's finish up with the letters.
Before we do, I have one more question. Do you think Gorsuch ever wakes up in the morning and says, oh, God, what have I done to myself here?
No.
It seems like he's enjoying it. You get a lot of respect as a U.S. Supreme Court judge.
It seems like he's enjoying the
Kool-Aid.
I've been waiting for Clarence Thomas to wake up that morning.
that's not going to happen.
Clarence Thomas, you see these pictures, these group pictures of the Supreme Court now? He's got the biggest smile of anybody there. It's amazing.
Well, you know what? That picture was taken at the end of session. He was just about to get into the Winnebago and go on a trip.
Okay. And Peter says, Rudy, for your information, Rudy Giuliani was at the Yankee game last night.
Was he booed?
Yeah, he was booed the last time he went.
Mm. Yeah.
That's when you know you're an awful and despicable human being. When you're going
when you go to the
Yankee
game.
Your Yankee game and you're the object of the Bronx cheer. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He was even responsible for the new stadium partially, right?
I mean, that was.
So, I thought that booing at the mayor was an affectionate tradition.
You're right, Mike.
Mayors
always get booed.
Has happened to civility in the Bronx?
Right.
He was there at one point?
He was upset that the—
Ask Joe Crowley about that.
That's right. He was upset that the concessions were taken over by the Red Hen Bistro, but other than that...
and while we're on the subject, just for a second, not to deviate, as Joe has instructed us not to do...
Did I ever do that? I think I'm the worst.
I am fascinated by the deviance in the polls that we saw. Now
the deviation.
The deviation.
Not the deviance.
Well,
that's
also
little...
the deviance.
Well, both.
Freudian.
Gotta give him that.
On the contrary. No, okay. So now we're finding that this wonderful lady who won in the Bronx, he was 35% ahead in the polls a couple of months, but 35% ahead in the polls. Now she wins by 15%. Hey guys, that's 50%.
He was aware in the last couple of weeks of how close this election really was, and he was all over the place spending millions of dollars on ads and being physically present, but he had already blown it when he didn't show up for the debate and didn't take it seriously.
It reminds me of when Helene Weinstein beat Stanley Steingut.
Only a few of us remember that.
Yes, well, it's what happened when I first came here in 1978.
When you were my student?
I wasn't, not yet.
Okay.
It was a few more years before that. But I remember it was a big tumult because Stanley Steingut was the leader from Brooklyn. He was the assembly speaker, and he'd been the speaker for a really long time, and he forgot his constituents, and Helene just out-campaigned him. And that was that.
In Flatbush. I have to say, one of the things that killed him was a rumor. I don't know if it ever was substantiated that he was the assemblyman from Flatbush, but that he had a place in Manhattan. That would do it, I'll tell you right now. But the other thing is that they threw every state worker, every legislative worker, everybody who worked for the assembly and the Senate went in there and campaigned like crazy, and it didn't help.
No, it didn't.
I think one of the things to remember too is the fact that polling firms and they're calling home numbers, right?
Right.
And if you're talking about a millennial, and if you're talking about a new person that's being registered to vote and coming to the polls, they're not answering polls. And so, I think the days of relying so aggressively on polling, those days are almost over.
She would have learned that on November 6th.
I'm doing a poll for a project I'm working on, and it is like pulling teeth to
get the pollsters
responses
say
now.
They can pay a lot of money to get lists of cell phones, and if you really want to pay, you can increase your accuracy by funding it.
Yeah,
we're
doing it that way, too. We already did that.
It's very expensive, isn't it?
It doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah. I know we're getting, don't even get me started on telephone calls and why I won't answer the phone anymore because they're always, they're always bogus.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan, I think there's more letters. We'll get to those. And then, and then we'll move on to other topics. We have tariffs to talk about. We have the abortion issue to talk about, which we touched on, but we'll do that some more. And we will continue our conversation right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this second of this Monday, the 2nd of July. We are in a new month. It's very hot. It's a holiday week. It took me about 13 minutes to get to work today. It normally takes me an hour. So nobody on the road. Nobody. But it was nice.
People yell at me for speeding.
No, I wasn't speeding. But
it didn't take long.
Didn't take long.
45
That's
instead
right.
of an hour.
Take long. Libby Post, Mike Spain, David Soares, and Alan with more letters.
Panel, I hope you will discuss John Bolton floating the possibility that Trump will recognize Russia's annexation of Crimea during the upcoming summit with Putin. Let me say, I must have missed that one.
Yeah, I missed that one, too.
This is huge. Mr. Bolton yesterday during when asked about the Crimea, he was very aloof. He was asked directly as to whether or not Trump would acknowledge and validate Russia's claim over Crimea. And he was as elusive as a fox, which has caused many to speculate that perhaps Donald will. And as a matter of fact, what is troubling about all of this is the fact that he will be having this conversation alone. There will be no one there in the room with him, translators from the United States to accurately record what is being said
by
two leaders.
In
the, oh, yeah.
That's what we saw with Kim Jong-un. So
and you see how well that's going now.
Yeah, it's going great. Well, we can touch on that too.
We should.
he said, and I just looked this up. So he said he used a Trump line, which is "We'll see. We'll see if recognizing Russian annexation of Crimea is on the table."
Yeah. Well, do you know what doesn't work for NATO? We'll see.
Yeah, right.
You know what doesn't work for all of those nations who are bordering the country of Russia? We'll see doesn't work for them. The very idea that he is going to actually meet with Putin, right, in the same month as he's meeting with NATO is a frightening proposition. Mm-hmm. And now for this person, Mr. Bolton, to not definitively say, absolutely not. He will absolutely not acknowledge,
the taking of Crimea.
But we hear that all the time. Mm. We'll see. And I feel like I'm, I'm 15 years old again, asking my parents if I can go to the concert with my friends. We'll see.
Well, he'll put his finger into the air and see how the wind is blowing on the day that he decides what to do.
And when
Mike,
he goes,
Mike, I don't know that I agree with you about that. I think my preference to understanding this is that the deal has been cut since the very beginning of the Trump presidency.
Prior, yeah.
And that here you have this Mueller investigation going on, and the whole center of this thing is the Russian collaboration. And now you have him going over there, and if they've got something on him, this is the time that the pressure would be exerted. I mean, I don't know that it's so, but I think it looks like it's so. Anyway,
yeah.
Glenn says, "I hope." Oh, we did that. Thank you, Glenn. That was a very good letter. And let's go to Jim in Bennington. Dear panel, it really I love Bennington. Did I ever tell you that? Dear panel, it really concerns me that there is a near sense of glee that anyone in the orbit of Trump will be ruined, at least financially. What if they are innocent? Does a citizen have to be incredibly wealthy to defend themselves from the government? That's Jim from Bennington.
I don't know that there's a sense of glee about that, Jim. But we were pointing out a fact that the issue for Mr. Cohen is not whether there's a pardon forthcoming. The issue, the more pressing issue for him now, is how does he pay for his representation while he's under investigation by the most powerful investigatory body on all of planet Earth.
And probably in history. Kevin says, tapes. Kevin from Melrose. Nixon was doomed when the tapes were released. Since Robert Mueller seems to be 6 months ahead of the media, how likely is it that Flynn, Papadopoulos, or someone else was recorded talking with the president? Is it possible Trump's cell phone was tapped due to national security concerns? How likely or unlikely would that be? That'd be a tough one, wouldn't it, David, to say we were taping a presidential candidate?
Well, you know, if two people are having a conversation on the phone and one decides to record it, that's not illegal.
In most states.
In New York, but not Massachusetts.
The issue, however, if you recall a few months ago when there was a lot of controversy about this president refusing to actually accept the phones that were being provided by Secret Service and insisted on maintaining his Apple phones, which, you know, were not encrypted with the technology that would prevent a hacking. So that's a real possibility.
And he also uses that phone for his own email. I mean, he doesn't use government email. Who knows where the servers are?
Well, you know, we
it's amazing.
Hillary's sitting back having a smoke and a laugh now.
Yeah, right.
I don't think so. I think
and
she's
crying.
Boy, they have really messed her up. God, it's awful. Chris says, Russia investigation. Dear panel, could you talk about what motivates certain Republicans, Trey Gowdy, Jim Jordan, McConnell, to remain vehemently and passionately pro-Trump, even as Mueller's crosshairs focus on the POTUS? Are they not putting themselves in the crosshair? Chris from Troy.
I think it's because they're getting politically what they want.
Yes, I agree.
That's what it's all about.
I.e. the Supreme Court.
Yeah, they're getting
among
a Supreme Court.
Among other things.
They're dismantling everything Obama did.
Right.
They're getting politically what they want. Whether they really support this man isn't the issue.
Well, I don't think it's just political. I do think that Trey Gowdy specifically, who's been eyeing a judicial position in his own state, I think That's what he's trading on. As far as the other characters, I mean, I think we have to communicate to the American people that, you know, the United States government is the largest business on all of planet Earth, and the people who represent the government represent the decisions as to where those dollars go. And that's what this is about. It's not about ideology, because if it were, then Donald Trump would not have an ally in Congress. If we're to believe the Congress is the Congress that existed the last 8 years that were deficit hawks.
I was talking to an assembly person not that long ago, David, and I was a little bit critical of the governor, which I don't think that person was adverse to. Nevertheless, what that person said, I'm trying to keep gender out of this, what that person said was, hey, I got to get some bills passed. I got to get some bills signed. So there's a lot of clout that these people can bring to bear, and it takes real courage to be able to stand up and look at them in the eye.
The Republican Party is hell-bent on destroying the entitlements of the federal government. They want to.
Well, they're costly, David.
It
costs a lot of money to provide these entitlements.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least the cost of a Tomahawk missile.
Except it's not an entitlement. It's what we've all paid into.
Well, I understand that. However, they want to rid the federal government's responsibility over entitlements. Mm-hmm. And this man can say what he wants. He can do what he wants. He can be as obnoxious and vulgar as he wants. They're going to continue supporting him so long as Scott Pruitt goes in every single day and hacks away.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. They're getting what they want politically.
You're begging a question here, though. So Mueller finally comes out with his report, and it includes a smoking howitzer or five that prove with tape and videotape and sworn testimony from everybody of full Russian involvement, money laundering, all kinds of criminal activity by the president. Maybe then they'll say, this guy's
his
toast.
Base will still stand up for
but
him.
But the leadership can then say, well, given what we've learned today, we have no choice but to congratulate President Pence.
Well, let me put it this way. I think that McConnell, and this is my personal opinion, is the most despicable and dangerous person in government right now, because he did deprive President Obama of a judicial pick. Who said they were going to pass it? But they didn't even let it go up to the floor. Now twice he got Gowdy on the court, right?
Gorsuch. I read that they want Gowdy's a possible pick.
There are two Republican senators who are floating Gowdy as a pick. Want the president to consider.
Yeah, sure.
It's not on the list of 25 that have been.
Sure, that'll be done.
You know, at the end of the day, I've gone through this cathartic process of blaming McConnell and all the others. But at the end of the day, had the people who were supposed to vote and exercise
their right.
You know,
well, of course, you're
gone
right.
out there and did what they were doing, we wouldn't have these issues. We wouldn't be pulling away from the global stage as a leader in environmental protection.
To what end?
We wouldn't be pulling away from what it means to be an American.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So to what end do we say this? They quote
for
here's what
2018 we, is
yeah,
to
well,
what end?
Well, what's your problem here is? You really don't want to say they deserve what they got, because they didn't deserve that he couldn't feed their children or that they couldn't have, they didn't deserve that.
No, they didn't. But the thing is that they're going to start feeling it, and they're going to start feeling it very, very soon.
They haven't felt it up to now.
Well, they will. I mean, the health care is going away. People's entitlement, their welfare, their food stamps, it's all going to get cut.
But you know something? They're not the only people that are being hurt, which is why, you know, if you're in the White House today, last week was a victorious week for this president. I think we can all admit that.
It came from the Supreme Court.
Right. Absolutely. So how does he follow it up? We need to abandon the World Trade Organization, and we need to impose taxes on everyone. That's how he follows it up. So
and
now what you have are big corporations coming out against this president.
Well, he followed up North Korea, which by many accounts was at least benign, but certainly was a feather in his cap, and he followed that up with going after the border. I mean, it just I don't get that strategy.
He's effective at keeping us jumping from one topic to another, one distraction to, you know, undo another one when there's too much attention. I mean, he's a masterful.
How many letters?
Okay, very
quick,
just a few, very quickly.
Okay, go ahead.
For your information, Rudy Giuliani was at the Yankee game last night, and that's
well, we
from
got
Peter.
That.
Yeah,
okay.
We did. Yeah.
All right.
And then Cohen from Jim. Trump won't say anything about Cohen. He will make another pardon to send Cohen. We did that one already, and maybe these are all been done before.
maybe we're done, actually.
Yeah, we did all of these.
But, you know, the point about the Giuliani thing is interesting because of the fact that he's going to Yankee games and isn't on CNN and Fox every night,
right.
I think tells you something, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he's fallen out of favor.
All right, let's take a break. Ray is in the studio. He's ready to go. The headphones are being applied to his skull and ears, and which, by the way, was my favorite club in college. Skull and Ears? Oh, great. We'll be right back after this. Okay, we have about 20 minutes left, and I want to get to as many topics as we possibly can in the 20 minutes because there's a lot of things here that we should be getting to. One, of course, is that the president has gone on the attack against Democratic lawmakers who have called for abolishing Immigration and Customs Enforcement, otherwise known as ICE, seeking to seize political advantage on an issue that has put him on the defensive for weeks and offering a winning message for Republicans facing a forbidding midterm election. You get rid of ICE, you're going to have a country that you're going to be afraid to walk out of your house, Mr. Trump said in a wide-ranging interview that aired on Fox is Sunday Morning Futures. So my question to the panel at large is, why are the Democrats doing this?
I don't think Democratic candidates are—well, there are some office holders and some recently elected people are calling for
Gillibrand.
The removal of ICE. What I think the message, I think they have handed a noose to their executioner here in the form of Trump. What they want to say is ICE— policies, some of ICE policies are extremely unfair. They're carrying out the job that the administration has charged them with doing, and they're awful policies and they need to change. No. But by saying abolish ICE, they give Trump this rhetoric.
Now, let me add to that you now have the specter of a populist uprising in the United States. You have a new congresswoman who gets elected, and then nobody saw it coming, and they really didn't see it coming. And now ICE becomes a very populist sort of objective, even though it doesn't make any sense, you know, that you're not going to abolish any kind of an enforcement arm. So that's a tough one.
So, I mean, and here you have her, the Democratic candidate in New York, who won the primary and unseated the number four House Democrat. But as the article in the Times reports, still only a small number of Democrats and Democratic lawmakers have called for abolishing ICE, but their ranks have been growing, especially since that primary.
To me, it's kind of like when Republicans say abolish the IRS. And then what? What do you do? You have to have some mechanism in place to do the necessary work that has to happen. It's a rhetorical phrase.
But it's helpful it's helpful to people who need that demographic with them.
Right.
But, I mean, that's true. Politically speaking, that's true. But it might be helpful, but it's also harmful. Because it gets us away from talking about what the real issues are and maintaining focus on one of the greatest atrocities that I've seen in my lifetime, which is separating young children from their parents. I think the entire conversation about abolishing ICE has helped this president be able to steer clear of the message that he's been running away from, which is the separation of children and families. And now he's pivoted to this. And going out in the rest of the country saying that's what these people want to do. The Democrats wants to abolish us.
And the problem is that because of the election down in Queens and Bronx, when Joe Crowley lost his seat, now I think many Democrats are thinking they need to pivot to the left, and this is the way to do it.
Well, you know what you do if you want to hold on to your seat? You do what she did.
Yeah, you go out and
you go out and you have conversations with people at their doorsteps again, and you find out, you know, what's happening in their lives, and you do whatever it is that you do to help them. That's how you win.
You know, I'm just going to say, you know, in terms of identity politics, David, You get people who turn out because they have somebody that they respect and who's more like them than the other guy.
And
I think that that's what happened.
Well, Joe Crowley was a white man representing a majority minority district.
But he could still relate to people. He could still have gone out. He didn't. He blew
didn't.
That election.
Right,
a lot of people are really angry at him because he was in a very powerful position. He's needed to get important funding, like for the rail link that would the Northeast Rail Link, and a freshman Congress member won't have that clout and won't be able to help New York get the funding it needs. And people are looking at the ramifications today and really worrying about it. I mean, are the Democrats are offering either Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer or this new extremely left socialist Democratic unit. Is there any in between? And probably a lot of people won't go to the polls who are in between, and that's probably a lot of people.
And there's been a lot of speculation as to why, you know, Hillary Clinton lost. Look, the reality is that this party has forgotten its own base. It is impossible. I would not in a million years have ever thought that we'd ever hear the term blue-collar billionaire to describe a guy like Donald Trump who he's a germaphobe and can't shake people's hands. That guy's not a blue-collar billionaire. But you know what? He did speak into the hearts of people who are frustrated by what's happening. And have Democrats have to understand that the only way to get back into power is to be able to get out to Philadelphia, to get out to Pennsylvania, to get out to Ohio, and start to speak into the lives of people again.
There's a big gap.
Correct.
Big gap there. If there's any Democrats who can do that, there's an opportunity here.
There's Joe Biden. He could
well,
do it.
Well, we can be pretty sure that people like Andrew Cuomo right now are really worried. I have good evidence about that, but let's just assume that they are really worried. They are really running scared. They say what happened in Queens, Bronx can happen to them, and they're not leaving anything to chance.
I'm just, you know, it's just frustrating to see all of this happening, you know, both on the federal level, on the state level. I mean, think about it. If you're a person living in upstate New York and Amsterdam, do you have any reason to believe anything that a politician, you know, is saying when you have to drive to the local coffee shop and all you see are closed, you know, foreclosure signs?
Well, right. The excellent article in Michael's paper, the Times Union, this weekend, which just showed the fleeing of the upstate population.
Continues to sag. But getting back to that, people have to decide what the best tactic is here. Democrats do. Do they dig down deep? Do they fight fire with fire and punch back like crazy?
You're raising the alternatives. What do you think?
Yes.
Or
do they try to raise your hope? Do they try to inspire people? Do they do the Michelle Obama?
It's a combination.
When they go low,
both.
You go high. And it's a dilemma. They're getting caught trying to do
well,
both.
Well, what should they do, Mike? Stop beating around the bush. Tell us what you think
should they do. Should they shut down the government? Should they shut down the government so that a woman's right to choose, affirmative action, marriage equality? Is this something worth shutting the government down?
There may be cases where people need to come out and rally like that. Absolutely. I think it's up to the Democrats. I'm not a Democrat, so I can't really say.
You're an independent.
He sounds like the FBI, the head of the FBI last week during his testimony. Right. I'm not a Democrat.
So, as David just mentioned, when it comes to a woman's right to choose. So this, obviously, we mentioned Senator Collins and what she said regarding Roe versus Wade and the choosing of a replacement for Justice Kennedy. There's an article this morning in the New York Times that talks about partisans on both sides of the abortion debate contemplating a Supreme Court with two Trump appointees, saying one thing is certain. America, even without legal abortion, would be very different from America before abortion was legal. The moment Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement, speculation swirled that Roe v. Wade, the landmark 1973 ruling that legalized abortion, would be overturned. Most legal experts say that day is years away, if it arrives at all. A more likely scenario, they predict, is that a rightward-shifting court would uphold efforts to restrict abortion, which would encourage some states to further limit access.
And they're already doing that. They're already doing that.
They are already doing that. And, you know, we not only need to look at Roe v. Wade, but we need to look at Griswold versus Connecticut, which was the decision that legalized contraception. Because they're not just going after abortion. They're going after contraception. They want women to be barefoot and pregnant. That's their goal. And, you know, people will go, oh, you're crazy. But the thing is that why would they go after contraception if that wasn't the case? Now, the fact of the matter is that abortion rates in this country are down. But it's poor women, women of color, who are going to be the ones who suffer from all of this because they won't have the resources to be able to go to another state. Because what may happen is the Supreme Court might uphold Roe, but say, oh, it's up to the states. And so you'll have California, you'll have New York and some other East Coast states and Washington maybe, but the middle of the country, you won't be able to get an abortion at.
It's pretty close to that already. It is, as you say, when we talk about blue states, red states, people who want to live in the present America will be living in blue states, and who want to live in the old America will be living in red states. But to your point, you know, when this particular man wore a hat that said "Make America Great Again," right? You have to understand that for a person of color like myself, America has been getting great with every year that we're moving forward.
That's right.
Okay, when I watched the movie Back to the Future, I wasn't looking to go back. I like the car that went forward and kept going forward. So when you say make America great again, make America great again for whom?
Well, that's exactly it. Look, his whole presidency is based on racism. He started when he walked down that gilded escalator and said Mexicans were rapists and drug dealers. It sent a message. It was red meat for the what would become his base, because the reason why these people are holding him up as being the second coming of Christ, and some of them are, is because they are afraid they will no longer be in the majority in this country. And they're absolutely right. They won't be. In another generation or two, white people will not be the majority, and they don't like that. And this is like this last gasp of that fear. Of, wow, we really are a nation of immigrants. We really are a multicultural nation. And it is possible for a black man to be elected president. And that scares the living daylights out of people.
But people forget that man was, people say he was a black president. He was a biracial president.
Right. Yeah.
But he's an American president. Mm-hmm. And America's going to look like America. Like where person doesn't have to check a box because there's 14 boxes that make up that one person. So this is a very frightening time. It may be an issue of politics for some, but for so many people in this country, there is reason to fear.
Well, and women are really going to be behind the eight ball if they go to destroying the fabric of reproductive health care in this country, and that's what they're doing. You know, people keep saying, oh, they're not going to be able to overturn Roe v. Wade because of precedent and all that sort of stuff, but they'll give the states the ability to do whatever it is that they want to do.
As I said before, they're already doing
it.
That's
already happening. I mean, there was a graphic in the Times, 2000 versus 2017, and the number of restrictions in states, and they've skyrocketed.
This is such nonsense when I hear Susan Collins who talks about precedent. I'm like, you know, Plessy versus Ferguson used to be precedent in this country from 1897 all the way to 1954 until Brown v. Board of Education.
Right.
So I'm not really crazy about the whole precedent thing being
But that's what all the Republicans are saying, so that to quell people's fears.
Yeah.
Well, it's precedent. I mean, marriage equality is another issue. I'm wondering, can they stop
reverse.
Us. Can they reverse marriage when so many of us are already married?
I think that's going to be difficult to take back, but what they're not going to do is they're not going to enshrine the rights of LGBT people to be equal to everybody
and
else.
And they're going to give
people a bye if you cite your religion. You can keep them out of your restaurant if you don't like
bakery.
Them, whoever
they
are.
So I'm going to keep those people out of my business as well.
Well, you know what?
It's just that simple.
Here's the irony. separate but equal.
Yeah, right, and that's what this is.
And that's what's going to happen. Right. Yeah.
So, all right.
So, you know, I just, one more thing on marriage equality. I think it'll be very difficult, but they may just throw it back to the states again, just like they'll throw this back.
Sure.
They'll throw Roe back to the states.
We have 4 minutes. We'll do a lightning round of letters.
Okay, here we go. And Katie says, I am tired of the media, NPR included, of referring to the Roe v. Wade ruling as abortion rights or pro-abortion. This is about choice. A woman's right to choose is what's at stake with the upcoming Supreme Court appointment. Using the word abortion in support of pro-choice only casts a negative tone on that side of the argument. That's from Katie.
It is. It's true. It's about giving women the opportunity to make their own decisions.
Timothy says, ICE. Nah, things were fine before ICE. Why the kerfuffle?
Kerfuffle.
Bobby says, Trump says we'll be afraid to walk out of our houses. Trump says we'll be afraid to walk out of our houses without ICE. I'm afraid to walk out of my house because of all the angry idiots carrying guns. Has anyone taken the...
Touché.
You make a point.
Yes. Has anyone taken the time to determine how many murders, rapes, thefts, etc. are carried out by Hispanics and other people of color and compare that to how many of these crimes are done by whites? I'd like to hear the results.
Well, immigrants commit far fewer crimes than people who were born here.
And Kathy says, the Dems have not forgotten their base. Sorry, I must disagree. This is a line that the GOP pushed. I don't think it's true. I think the Democrats lost because the Russians were really effective. Nancy says, panel, Trump can't pardon Michael Cohen if he's convicted of state charges. It's still incarceration if he's locked up in a state facility. We've mentioned that a number of times here. But of course, you know, before they do these pardons, everybody will have to be on board. Right, David?
That's true.
Yeah. And James says, cell phone polling. I know most young people like me do not answer unknown numbers. My older family members would always answer the phone even when they don't know the number. Young people are much more skeptical and don't want to be bothered by unknown people calling. I may have had a poll calls, but I would never know because I just hit ignore. Well, folks, the question you want to ask is, forget about polling. Are you going to vote?
Right.
Are you going to vote?
That's the most important poll, you know.
The highest form of polling.
And Colleen says, two things. Dear panel, good morning. Rudy has spent the last 1.5 to 2 weeks in Iran talking to opposition leaders. When is Rosemary coming home? We need her here in the USA. Colleen. Okay, and Robert says, pardon. Good morning, panel. It's been my understanding that the president cannot pardon crimes that are committed. We did that one just now. If this is true, how can he pardon Cohen for anything that's being investigated by the state of New York? That's one of the reasons that the AG, well, we had one, was talking about that. And Norman says, Supreme Court, Trump can throttle the Mueller investigation by appointing Sessions to the Supreme Court. Anybody on that one? Okay, and Timothy says, civility. Dear panel, I'm witnessing some of my most staid and reserved friends taking up the mantle of protest revolving around this administration. Some are now advocating personal confrontation with Trumpians. These folks wouldn't even bother to vote. I say, get out there and do it in capital letters. Richard says, Trump and Russia, he owes them big money. He wants to sell them big projects. He likes authoritarianism, and that's from Rich. And John says, hardball. Good morning. Once again, a vivid display of Republican hardball versus Democratic play it nice. Does anyone believe that the Democrats have a powerful team mounting a campaign to discredit the Federalist Society, comparable to the Trumpies' all-out war on the FBI? And that's all I got, Joe.
All right. Any last words? Anything we missed? Anything on anybody's mind? We have 30 seconds. Anybody? 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 Okay.
Trump's greatest contribution to this country will be the fact that he sets us back about 50 years with the judicial appointments. And remember, everyone's making a big deal out of the Supreme Court appointment, but it's really all of those appointments that he's had on the appellate
bench.
Excellent
point.
Yes.
My thanks to everybody. Libby, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mike, thank you. We'll see both of you tomorrow.
Yes, you will.
David, hopefully we'll see you next week. Thank you very much. Alan, thank you. And we'll be back with more show after this.